This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
It's been a great start to the NFL season, and it's only getting better at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. DraftKings is kicking off another week of action by giving new customers a can't-miss offer. Just bet $1 on any football game this week and receive $150 in free bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps to receive $150 in free bets instantly when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
We kick off hour number two of the program. It's brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com and become a member. We're members. You should be as well. Anything a bank can do, they got you covered, and their customer service is incredible. It is the official credit union of Three and Out, the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. For all the mistakes made up to this point, Houston, it's 24-14.
I forgot that we forced the fumble. That was a fourth down, too. They would have converted. In the first half.
Fourth and two, and a big play for them, too, down the field. Yep. And, you know, like, you've missed a field goal. You're down 10. I mean, they got the ball to start the second half. They scored. I mean, it's still a pretty even game. You've made some mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You're down 10, but you have the football. And in a game like this, like, you're going to have to score touchdowns. And you get it. You've got fourth and five. You run a mesh concept over the middle. You spring Callaway wide open. I mean, wide open.
Yeah.
And this isn't like a slant route where it's a tight bang-bang type of catch the football thing. It's not a deep ball down the field where you have to, like, contort your body to get your hands on it and catch it. It's the easiest ball to catch. You're coming right over the middle. It's put right on your number nine. Not thrown too hard, and you just drop it. I mean, you just can't have that. Like, that, those are the plays that are the difference in the game.
Mm-hmm. I still can't. Did you watch the field goal again?
No, I didn't.
Starts out fading to the right and then just whips back to the left. Just, it was like the ball said, I'm just going to go around the goalpost. I think it landed. Like, if you draw a straight line from where he kicked it to where it landed, I think it's good. They just had some crazy English.
Yeah.
A nice draw, if you will. Unreal.
I do think your point about Tennessee wearing down is definitely a big part of it, especially, our defense wearing down. You know, I don't know that the offense had any issues with that, except for the fact that if Cooper Mays goes out of the game, like, our offensive line is just different.
Yeah.
And when he was hurt, and tried to keep playing, it wasn't as good. Although he still gutted it out enough on the rest of that series where it was your receiver that cost you the drive. And there's just, like, we just don't have that continuity when he goes out of the game on the offensive line. Let's go to the G3 Help Me Hotlines. We got Matt up first. What's up, Matt? You're on Three and Out.
What's going on this morning, guys?
Well, I'm rewatching the game. Talking about the game, getting mad all over again at I don't think it impacted the game, but man, Florida seemed to hold every single play and this not getting caught. I guess when you're considered to be a pretty good team, you get away with some of that stuff. But did either team get called for a hold all game? I think maybe Florida got called for one or two.
Us on a kickoff.
Yeah, a kickoff. That's right.
I don't know about it, like, actual. Run of play.
I mean, I'm watching.
The holding on kickoff calls just kind of amaze me every time, unless they're blatant. I thought the one they called in that game wasn't that obvious. And I don't think they even went back and replayed it.
I'm watching the first play for Florida in the second half, and three of their five offensive linemen are holding. And Emory Jones escapes the pocket, takes off running, and gets 5 yards.
Well, I don't know, guys. I mean, I'm not wanting to beat a dead horse. I mean, it's just we got beat by a better team. It is all it is. But, I mean, I think there's some positive takeaways from that game, mm-hmm. and there's some negative takeaways from that game. I think that you can see that if this coaching staff had the right players in space or the right players in place and had some depth, I mean, we could throw up a lot of points, and I'm banking on that for the future. But my problem, guys, is this just goes back. It's not with the coaching staff, really. It's not. My whole problem with just where we're at is it's the administration and the decision for stuff. I mean, like last week, it's Florida week, and we announced during Florida week that we're going to cancel the Army game because we're scared to play Army. And we're going to restructure the whole seating fiasco. Why would they do all that stuff here in Florida week, guys?
I didn't have as much of a problem with the Army game because I hate preparing for a triple option team, even if it's in game one or a bowl game. And in the middle of the season like that, it gets even tougher. I know it looks like a cowardly move, but good teams cancel games all the time. I mean, when Urban got to Ohio State, they canceled a bunch of SEC matchups. Michigan's canceled a bunch. I think Michigan canceled one with us, if I'm not mistaken, a while back. So I don't hate the Army one. The ticket thing, the way I understood it is they were going to try to roll it out the week of Tennessee Tech, and they had some rollout issues. They weren't exactly sure how they were going to handle some things. The timing on that, I'll have a problem with that. The overall idea, not that bad when it kind of comes down to it, but I don't. The timing doesn't make a lot of sense.
Weird. Yeah, it doesn't. I don't. And then they also like. I think the problem. I mean, I don't want to go on a rant this morning just on this whole thing, but we just do not. We haven't had it in a while. It's an abundance mentality, right? Like this, our culture here as a program is it's to lose. I mean, I don't agreeing or disagreeing on the Army game. The bottom line is we canceled it because we're afraid to play them. We don't want to prep for that game. That sends a message. Or when your athletic director comes in, and instead of saying, "Hey, look, we're going to pack this thing," you guys remember Bruce Pearl when he came in? He was talking about how he was going to fill Thompson Bowling Arena. There wouldn't be enough seats,
mm-hmm.
and he's out there just whining and dining with the fans. Our baseball coach is doing that. Nobody's making this football coach do anything, and I hate saying this because he is hired just to coach, and that's it pretty much. But the university needs someone that's all around. This is a tougher job than an Alabama or a Florida. Fan morale is at an all-time low, and if people don't realize that or see it, most everybody I talk to, including myself, is just apathetic on that Florida game. I could care less that we lost it. I think I got upset one time. That's not a good place to be in for a program.
No, but Matt, if you're apathetic, isn't that a good time to just roll out that plan? Like, I mean, Danny's like, I ain't gonna have to worry about too much of it coming back on me if people aren't really caring.
Well, I kind of agreed with you, Matt, last week, but then I started thinking about it. Is you can't roll out that plan before the season starts. That just makes everybody mad before the year. You needed to roll it out either after Bowling Green or after Tennessee Tech, because if you rolled it out this week, people would be livid. So
after another loss, you mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, they rolled it out after Tennessee Tech. I mean, it's kind of the best they could do, I guess.
Yeah, maybe there's not. I mean, I'm probably just bitching. I mean, there's probably not a right time, but I don't know, man. I think Heupel is a good coach. I think on the field, he actually is going to be a – He'll be able to do something. I just think the problem is going to be his recruiting is, I think, going to – it's hard to recruit here now. And our administration doesn't do anything to help him, nor do they do anything to make him make this place more sellable, you know, like a Vitello or a Pearl. I mean, we're only a good basketball program now because of Bruce Pearl. I mean, we've got an excellent basketball coach now. But if we were to, if the roles were reversed and we went and hired, what's our basketball coach's name?
Rick Barnes?
I'm drawing a blank. Yeah, Rick Barnes. If we went and hired Barnes from Texas at the time, Tennessee basketball probably wouldn't be where it's at if he swapped place with Pearl, because Pearl had to build that program up. And I just don't see Heupel as a whole you know, I don't know, man. And there's a lot of glaring mistakes in that Florida game, too. There was a lot of good things, but time management, I agree with you earlier, Nate. I think is not – you got to call timeout when you've got – just because the clock keeps running. I like the first couple of plays at the 50-yard line where you break 15 yards and that tempo and you're just – there. It's just kind of controlled chaos. I don't think defenses can plan for that. But you got to call timeout at a point to set yourself up to either figure out if you're going to do a field goal or try to get two plays in. Because I don't care how good you are, an 18-year-old kid's mind does not work that fast.
Yeah, so. No, I thought it was a good point someone made. You know, you're saving one timeout in case you have a penalty to avoid the 10-second runoff, because, I mean, saving 10 seconds on a runoff is a pretty big deal. And then another one to set up the field goal. So I just went back and rewatched it. You really didn't lose as much time. Now, maybe if you – and then again, I'd have to go back and watch. But if you felt like you had a personnel matchup you liked, if you take a timeout, Florida gets to sub in fresh guys, and obviously you get a little bit of a break with the timeout, but you're not going to sub in a, you know, platoon on the offensive line. So maybe they thought they had some, like, you know, you were moving the football pretty well right there.
Yeah.
You had the momentum. You just forced a turnover, so maybe you're just trying to keep Florida on their heels. Did we take a shot at the end zone there?
No, we weren't really
I don't remember
close enough to.
If we did or not.
Okay.
I know we did at the end of the game. I thought it was kind of funny that Milton overthrew the last play of the game.
Yeah, I mean, on that one, you just got to make it, you got to put it in play. Yeah. Just make it, you know, it's got to be catchable. An interception there doesn't really matter, so just
hey,
put it in play.
We've figured out who our quarterback was, correct? I hope there's nobody out. Milton is not the quarterback, unless Hooker's hurt.
Yeah, I want to get into that more.
Overthrow a shovel pass. How do you overthrow a shovel pass, guys?
Dude, he's got a cannon.
God.
It's like telling a tiger not to hunt.
But imagine how much that stretches out the defense, Matt, because they know how far we can throw that shovel pass.
Well, yeah. Watch out, man. We got them linebackers backed up. Oh, Jesus.
Imagine how much that helps the running game on the other plays. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Hey, tomorrow I'll call some, but we'll talk some golf.
There we go. Alrighty. Yeah, yeah. Big weekend for golf. Nice USA chance going out all over the world. I'm not out on Milton forever, but clearly he's got some stuff he's got to dial back. I mean, hell, he could figure it out this week. I don't know. But if Hooker's – we think that was a concussion on the flea flicker from hell?
I don't know.
I can't wait to go back. I'm going to watch that one again here in a second. Did Cade Mays get whipped on that one? Someone got absolutely just whipped.
Look at
the slowest developing flea flicker in the world.
Well,
good God.
We're going to we're going to keep it right here. We got DR Vol up next. What's up, DR? You're on 3 and Out.
Guys, I'm out on Milton forever. I needed him last year and JT Shrout this year.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why you went back to that well, DR. That's on you, man. Like, you knew better. You knew better.
Well, I'm a clown. I mean, last year I picked Florida to cover and they didn't. This year I picked Tennessee to cover
You should have gone Florida again.
Maybe it's just home team.
That's the only thing that saved my gambling year was all the money I made on Florida this week.
Well, luckily, the only reason I did it was I wanted that Barstool hoodie, but luckily, I guess it was risk-free because I checked my account Sunday and
there
those $50 were still in there.
That's the spirit.
I'm actually not going to be overly negative. I mean, we have no depth, that's for sure. And, you know, 17-14, Russ got on to me because I called his halftime show and said, is this going to be like Georgia last year? And he called me a sick word, and it happened, as it always does. I will say, I hope Callaway watches the offensive lineman from Florida on film so he learns to hold on to something.
People were like, just showed up about the holding. I mean, I'm not saying we would have won the game, but it was very blatant. And then, yeah, the drop spike. I mean, it was so bad. Multiple times, too. It wasn't just, you know, one key play here and there. I mean, it was almost every play, and it wasn't just the offensive line. It was the offensive line. It was receivers. It was running backs. It was everybody. And they, we didn't get called for a hold on the offensive line. I think that's the first game this season that's happened. So maybe the refs were just kind of letting them play on the interior, but daggum. If it's one here and there, sure. But on one play, I just freeze-framed it a second ago. Three Florida guys have their arm around our necks behind us. That's a hold.
And I noticed it more the first half, Houston. And I'm like you. I don't think it would have changed like we'd won or anything. And I noticed the more first half because we were in the game. And I don't know. That was maddening to me. I will say I'm glad I didn't get through on the voluntary reaction because I did do what Houston told me to do. I started drinking at half, like the Florida in 16. It didn't pan out well, and I was in a terrible mood, so I'm glad I didn't
You started through. Drinking at the half? Buddy, I heard your phone call on Wes's halftime Periscope. If you started drinking at the half, it took you a – what did I say? I said Russell's. Russell's halftime?
It sounded like Wes.
You said Wes.
I meant Russell. Sorry. We don't have Wes.
Yeah, you said Wes. I'm like, man, I was drunk. I don't call it.
I didn't even recognize you at first. I was like, that's not DR. Did you maybe second quarter? About start of the second quarter?
Yeah, maybe towards the end. It was whenever the kids left. So
okay.
People are going to get mad about this. I don't care. Davey, I got a Titans question. I heard Vrabel left the press conference pissed off and slammed the door. Do you know what happened?
I do not. I can look into it. We recorded last night, and I hadn't heard that at the time. But, yeah, I don't.
Okay, they were talking about it in the group chat.
I'll look into it.
Okay. All right, guys. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, JR. Appreciate it, buddy.
It was 31-14, 4th-and-2, Houston, when Tennessee got the delay of game.
30-14, 4th-and-2?
31-14.
Where's the ball?
Around midfield. It was the first play of the
Did
second.
Did we convert the next one?
It was the first play of the fourth quarter.
Oh, no, we punted, didn't we? We punted. Were we going to go for it? I think so.
But it's like we sat around thinking about it so long that then we just got the delay game and then, just punted. Like, what?
Penalties will kill you.
Man.
Kill you.
All right, back to the G3 Help Me Hotlines. We got Greg up next. What's up, Greg? You're on 3 and Out.
What's up, fellas?
Morning, Greg.
Hey, I just wanted to disagree with your caller 2 callers ago talking about Josh Heupel. They're not making him get out and do stuff with the fans and get hype on the football program and all that. And then they lose. What's he going to call in and say? Why is he out there with the quarterback club every other weekend not coaching these kids? Come on, man. Give the guy a break. He inherited a terrible program. And he can't recruit right now because no one knows what the sanctions are going to be. Give the man some time. If we hit some plays in that game that are completely wide open, that's a different game. He can't throw it and catch it, keep the fans happy, the AD rolling out new stuff. I mean, there's not a perfect time for that stuff right now because we're not good. Nobody's going to be happy.
No, I don't disagree with that. Like what Danny stuff. White does, I don't think Matt was necessarily – comparing, like, you know, blaming Heupel for what Danny White does. And also, I mean, Pearl was a little bit different, right? That's just Pearl's personality. He's going to come in and just, you know, get everybody fired. Tony Vitello didn't exactly do that to start. It took him a little while to kind of develop the personality and have some success. And now, of course, he's the great promoter. And he did some things, I think, in year one or year two that were pretty creative, but they didn't move the needle as much for people who didn't follow baseball. He got fined and suspended and did like a lemonade stand out front. Like that was pretty funny. But once you have a little bit of success, it's easier to kind of settle into your personality. Heupel, he has a really big job, and he was a little short-sighted with when he was hired. Obviously, he's got the NCAA stuff. He needed to focus on football and getting this team as prepared as possible for this season. So I'm not upset with Heupel that he's not, you know, Johnny Promotion here. But
yeah, and everybody that meets him say they like him a lot. I'm sure once he gets a few things going, and like you said, he came in way late. He should have been hired. First off, Pruitt should have been fired 3 months prior, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, he was behind the eight ball, and he still is. And some of those plays that he had drawn up for Florida, there were people with nobody 20 yards from him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we can get somebody that's a little quicker at quarterback with releasing the ball and knows exactly what's going on, which might take another year in the system, there's going to be there's going to be plenty of scoring to go around. And we thought the defense was going to be awful this year. They're actually decent. They're playing way above everybody's heads from my standpoint. I don't know about you guys.
They play well in spurts. They're just thin.
Yeah, they're inconsistent. And we've just got defense. It's more important to be solid at all 11 spots. And we just got some guys that I think are playing a lot better than I expected. I agree with that, Greg. And then we got a couple spots where they'll be okay for a while, and then they just make a just god awful something. You know, like they just the linebackers are the number one problem at the moment. But
and we need a couple other guys in the back end with a little more speed. We got some guys maybe playing back there that their best spot would be linebacker, but they'd have to be bigger.
Yeah,
got some tweeners. It looks like.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Good points. It's just, you know, and I think Houston's point that you kind of wear out on defense, and that's probably going to happen more if you can't control these games with your offense coming up, because you're about to play some teams that aren't superior to you one-on-one when you compare, okay, our D-tackle to their D-tackle, our linebacker to their linebacker. Mm-hmm. But can you put pressure on those teams and stay ahead of it to where the fact that their second-string guy, their third-string guy, or their rotational players might be slightly better than your rotational guys, can you win enough when it's one versus one where that doesn't matter? Mm-hmm. You know, can you stay ahead of those teams and get the job done? That's going to be the big question, because it's going to be impossible to do that against Alabama and Georgia, but it's going to be very possible against Missouri, Kentucky, South Carolina, and then
the next 2 weeks are pretty big for the end result of this season is.
And then your ones are better than Vandy, South Alabama. So it's, I guess in order, it's, you know, Georgia.
I like
Alabama
our ones over South Carolina's ones.
Ole Miss is going to be tough. Then Missouri and Kentucky, I feel like it's really even with those. And then you should be better than South Carolina.
Missouri and Kentucky not scare me nearly as much now as they did before the season, but they are two road games, which is going to make it a little bit of a challenge. Not that those are the, you know, most hostile two environments that you're going to deal with in the SEC, but I thought Kentucky looked pretty pedestrian against South Carolina, who we know is not a very good football team. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Vandy's Vandy. They got smacked around quick by Georgia. Missouri goes on the road and loses to Boston College. That's a game. I think Davey said the line. I know it's close. I think Davey said the line's 3 points, and that's a game you can go in and win.
Yeah, oh yeah.
If you can get a couple guys healthy and not do the stupid things that have gotten you beat against Pitt and Florida, the drop, you know, the missed passes, the drop passes, the stupid penalties. If you can trim those down, you don't have to cut them out. Just trim them down a little bit. I mean, the next two games are games you can win fairly comfortably if you play well, and that's what we all want.
Mm-hmm.
Get a road win against Missouri, come home, take care of South Carolina, and then get ready for Ole Miss and Alabama.
Stick with us. Hour two continues right here live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios Fan Run Radio. Pick you up some White Claw this week. Only 5% alcohol by volume, 100 calories, and only 1 gram of sugar. It's White Claw Hard Seltzer. Welcome back to Three and Out. This segment brought to you by the FanDuel Sportsbook app. They've got you covered for all your betting. Hope you made a lot this weekend. I don't know why you would go Florida 1 year and then back Tennessee the next year. This
one's home and away.
Yeah, quit taking the road team, maybe. I don't know. Tonight in the NFL, you got Philly and Dallas, and if you're new to the FanDuel Sportsbook app, you can go 30-1 odds on either team to win the game. That means you can end the NFL week right by winning $150 on a $5 bet with the FanDuel Sportsbook app. You can also jump in on Same Game Parlay if you haven't used your $10 risk-free Same Game Parlay this week for NFL Week 3. Make sure you get in on it tonight, since that'll be your last chance. FanDuel, sports betting made simple. And they're always hooking you up with great offers. Plus, when you win, you get paid in as little as 24 hours. We love FanDuel. We all use it here on the show. And you'll love it as well. Sign up with our promo code 3OUT before Dallas takes on Philly tonight. That's 3OUT. You could win $150 on a $5 bet exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Must be 21 or older. Present in Tennessee. New users only. First deposit must be $10 required. Must wager in designated offer market. Max bonus $150. Bonus fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Site credit expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. For gambling problem, call the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. All right, so we said we're going to talk about the quarterbacks. We never really got to it. I'm not going to, like, give up on Joe Milton. I just think I'm giving up on Joe Milton being significantly better than Hendon Hooker. Hendon Hooker seems to be able to get the football where it needs to go more effectively than Joe Milton. The sample size on both is still very small. I do think once you combine all the evidence we have on Joe Milton so far, he's got major accuracy issues, and I don't, you know, if for some reason Hooker can't play this week, then you need to craft a game plan that helps Joe Milton have some throws he can make, and try and get him in rhythm into the game, and maybe the offense just needs to be slightly different with each quarterback instead of, hey, both these guys can run our system. Like, maybe it's the same system, but maybe you just got to call slightly different plays for these two guys. I do think it's fine and helpful for Joe Milton for you to try and get a guy wide open deep and let him just throw it a mile, even if you don't hit it. It's okay to throw that ball and not hit it because it does back up the defense. It is, you know, we joked about the shovel pass earlier, but I mean, that is an element to football to stretch the defense so that you've got more stuff open in the intermediate and in the run game. But, I mean, I don't know. It was a spot duty thing at the very end of the game. I don't know how much you even count what happened Saturday night with him, but it's just more evidence of the same, at least.
You know, Hooker came out and he didn't look very good at first. Then they ran him a couple times, got him tackled, and he kind of settled in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty tough spot for Joe to come in.
Well, it's kind of like Hooker of the Pitt game. Like, he looked awful at first possession.
Right.
So I think they can both do some good things. I thought Hooker played pretty well.
He did.
To be a Tennessee quarterback in the swamp with less talent than the defense.
He wasn't a problem. I mean, he missed a couple throws. The one to Warren where he got, you know, pounded. I'm not going to blame that on him. The first one to Callaway was a little bit behind him. He's still got two hands on it. Probably needs to make a difficult catch there. The dump slant there, I mean, that's a got to catch it, you know, 100 times out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
He did throw some good passes to start the third quarter. No, I guess it was the end of the second quarter as you're going down to drive for the, you know, the field goal there, the tying field goal that we ended up missing. Made some good throws. Receivers made some tough catches. I was talking to Christopher Gabriel before the game. He just sent me a message, said, the drops are what's killing him on the season. And it was another problem against Florida. What's weird is it's not just one guy. Peyton had some drops against Tennessee Tech. Hyatt had drops against Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Valus has had some drops here and there. Then obviously Callaway against Florida. It's different guys. I saw that Brian Harsin and Auburn fired their wide receivers coach. Was that after the Georgia State game?
I guess.
They just, you know, mid-season made a Jeremy Pruitt-style move. I'm not saying fire Cody Burns right now, although he is from Auburn, so I don't – maybe that's a problem. But it seems to be a problem with all of our quarterbacks, too. You know, it's not just Milton. And, you know, last week that was the conversation. Oh, he has the highest drop rate in the SEC. It's because he's throwing the ball too hard. I mean – Hooker had some really bad drops go against him Saturday night. And I know a lot of people were, you know, screaming at Jimmy Callaway. Again, young player, first time playing meaningful snaps on the road, especially in a place like Florida. I don't know if it was a full seated crowd, but it was a sellout in the Swamp. Probably got a little bit nervous. Those are plays he'll probably make as he matures as a player. But it's also just catching the ball when you're wide open. That's kind of your only job. You know, and that said, there were some really tough catches that they made. That the Peyton, that was the fourth down. He climbs the ladder to go get that one. Velas had a tough one on a deep, kind of a skinny post, deep slant type catch on the field goal drive where we missed. So they're making some tough catches here and there, but they're also dropping some pretty easy ones. I wonder, as the season goes on and we kind of settle into this system, we get to know it, get a little bit more familiar, do those problems go away? Obviously, into year two, you want to be better as far as guys knowing where they're supposed to be. They're not thinking as much about the route. They're not worried about, did I make the right cut and the right steps? They just kind of know that it's second nature. Then they just go up and catch the ball. So there's a lot of, you know, first-year problems that I'm seeing that maybe those get better. The optimistic part for me is, A, the only receiver that Heupel's recruited here was Peyton. He got him through the transfer portal, and he's playing meaningful snaps. Caught a big touchdown, obviously, against Florida. So I think as he gets his guys in here, you'll be even better. Quarterbacks, obviously, you know, Hooker was already here, and that's your starter right now. Milton, I just wonder as we get into later this season and then year two and year three, do we see a lot of these problems start to go away offensively as the system becomes kind of second nature to the offensive players? The offensive line, I know they've been banged up. They've still been better than they have been the last couple of years. So I think Ellerby's doing a pretty good job. Defensive line, I think I saw going into the Florida game, they were the third highest graded in college football, according to Pro Football Focus. That probably takes a hit this week, naturally, but that's a pretty damn good opponent. I think the defense as a whole is playing a little bit better, again, in spurts than I thought was even possible, but then they're doing some really dumb things here and there. And then, I think depth and, you know, quality depth and just being so thin at so many positions is really giving you trouble, especially as guys get dinged up and can't go as many snaps as they were in the beginning of the season. When you go from Tyler Barron to Latrell Bumpus, like, that's a pretty big drop-off. Byron Young's still kind of getting into game shape. We got to get more dudes. And Greg talked about the recruiting. Heupel's, he's getting guys in here, and I think the offense is going to sell itself. I'm optimistic that the defense playing as hard as they're playing and as well as they're playing. I'm not as worried about recruiting once we get the NCAA stuff behind us. And a lot of those high school coaches we talked about a few weeks back, they're not even worried about it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying it doesn't seem like it's going to be that big a deal. Nobody's really talking about that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't worry too much about it. I'm hoping as people watch this team and the effort they give, the style that we play, that's what kind of sells it. Because I think Heupel behind the scenes is doing all the right things. Jalen Hyatt's dad, Jamie, had a couple of really good tweets after the game that I want to get into a little bit later, kind of about the culture of the team. Things like that will sell in recruiting. Heupel drawing up plays to get guys wide open will sell in recruiting. You know, the offensive line against a pretty damn good Florida defense, opening those holes for the running backs will sell in recruiting to offensive linemen and running backs. Whoever said that you're not going to get good running backs under Josh Heupel because they don't run the football, that's proven not true. He runs the ball quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're seeing the little pieces of stuff come together as far as the big picture. We just need to kind of put it a little bit more together, win the games now that you're supposed to, and kind of just see what happens. If the NCAA wasn't as much of an issue, are we a little higher in recruiting? I'm not sure. Maybe, maybe not. But if we can clean up the mistakes, you know, win games like Missouri, South Carolina, Kentucky, South Alabama, Vanderbilt. I mean, if you can go 7-5 and get to a bowl game, whether we're allowed to play in it or not at the time, I think that would sell. But I'm not as down on the recruiting right now as some, because I think you're in it with some guys and you're not embarrassing yourself out there on either side of the football. You don't have depth and you don't have as much talent as you'd like.
Well, I mean, I don't know. So far this season, it's gone exactly the way I thought it would. Pittsburgh, we said, was a complete toss-up. Figured you lose to Florida. Everything is going to hinge on this next stretch of the season. And the good news is I think you've shown that you can be good enough to win these games. And neither one of the two biggest swing games, I thought, in conference were Missouri and Kentucky. You know, I've always thought Ole Miss is going to be a little better than you and that South Carolina is going to be worse. I mean, I'm not forgetting any others, right? I mean, that's the four games. They're the most middle of the games, right?
Missouri, Kentucky,
you're in the middle.
Yeah.
Ole Miss, a little better. South Carolina, worse. And then, obviously, Vandy and South Alabama are much worse.
Yeah.
And Alabama and Georgia are much better. So,
sure.
Like, those four games, that's it. Like, those four games in Pitt were always going to determine the season.
Right.
And Pitt, you let it get away. You could have won that game. You easily could have won that game.
Yeah.
Could have just played better and won.
Did you see what they did, by the way, over the weekend?
So.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
It took out a little frustration, I think.
Well, I'm completely confused.
About?
Well, Bowling Green beat Minnesota.
Yes.
But Pitt last week lost to
Western Michigan.
So who knows what's going to happen in college football each week.
Narduzzi got tired of people calling for his job, I think. So they decided to hang 77 on New Hampshire.
Do they play Clemson this year?
Yes.
I think they got a shot. From everything we've seen so far.
The next two games they have are at Georgia Tech, bye week, at Virginia Tech, and then they get Clemson in Pitt. Clemson, if you were under a rock this weekend, lost in overtime at NC State, who Mississippi State housed earlier this year.
Yeah, Clemson's not good.
Clemson not very good. Who did Louisville kill this weekend?
Florida State,
who Ole Miss destroyed Louisville.
Ole Miss is really good.
Ole Miss is really good.
I think. Or, I mean, at least they've played really, really well.
Really well. Their defense is better, and their offense is as expected.
Mm-hmm. We'll see if they can. We can see if they're on that level of the other big dogs, I guess. Georgia took care of business. You've got a noon game this Saturday with Arkansas rolling in to Sanford Stadium between the hedges. It's a top 10 matchup at noon. That's going to be interesting.
Shouts out Arkansas.
Yep.
Doesn't that give you a little bit of hope, like Arkansas in year two under Pittman? Like, is it possible that we can make a jump like that?
I think it just proves that you don't have to have
four
years of elite recruiting to all of a sudden at least challenge the other big dogs.
Right.
You know, you can get a few guys or coach up a few guys, get them in the right places, allow your system to match your personnel. And you can beat the middle teams, the SEC, that middle bulge where most teams are.
Yeah.
All those teams that just kind of hang out in the middle. And, you know, it was A&M last year kind of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's Arkansas this year has flipped the script and they're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Texas beat.
It was Mississippi State with Dan Mullen there for a minute.
Yeah. Arkansas, don't get me wrong, they're a pretty damn good team. They've benefited a little bit. I don't know how good Texas was ever supposed to be. Obviously, it's Sark's first year, right?
Well, they destroyed
Texas. Is it Sarkisian's first year? Yeah, so that's his first year. And A&M, they got a lot of hype, but obviously they've lost their quarterback. They lost five offensive linemen. They're not nearly as good as a lot of people thought. And Arkansas, year two, they found a quarterback, and they look pretty good. So year two, Heupel can develop or find a quarterback, and Banks gets some of his guys in here flying around on defense. I think he got a chance. How many seniors do we have on defense right now? Is it possible the whole defense could return next year?
I don't know.
Not that they would necessarily. I'm just hypothetical.
Yeah, I don't know. Good question. Ole Miss Alabama, that is the 3:30 game, of course, coming up. Alabama, the home team on that one. Right now, looks like they're about a 2-touchdown favorite. We'll come back. Final segment, hour number two. Stick a
little
with
injury update on Mays and Hooker on the other side, too.
All right.
Hola.
Final segment, hour number two. Kind of a fascinating week next week in the SEC.
Oh, yeah?
East. Obviously, Tennessee takes on Missouri. You got Kentucky and Florida playing at 6 o'clock.
Lexington?
Yes.
Hmm.
Florida about an 8-point favorite, touchdown favorite there.
Really? So 11. So they think Kentucky's going to be about a touchdown better than us, give or take?
But it's – wait. No? Oh. Yeah. That just makes sense. Yeah.
Maybe 8 or 9. Just yeah, because yeah. Their place gave them 3 points.
I guess so.
Hmm. All right. Austin Price, Sunday night on The Nation, said that as of right now, Hendon Hooker and Cooper Mays would be considered very questionable.
Very questionable.
Very questionable for this week's matchup in Como.
See, this is the fear, right? That
mm-hmm.
because
yes.
you're thin, like let's say if you played Missouri this Saturday, but it was the first game of the year. So it's mm-hmm. not, there's no like, well, Josh Heupel, it's first game he's got. His guys are behind the eight ball from a knowing the playbook standpoint. It's still like, you know, October, but everybody's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
The fear is, okay, that's a coin flip. Let's just call it 50-50. Neutral side, I mean, it's just – but because Tennessee has 71 scholarship kids and let's say Missouri has 81, and it really doesn't matter how many total you have. It's how many quality guys you have in the that can play, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say, for example, that Missouri has a few more of those guys and then maybe just random luck, Tennessee has a few more injuries. Now, all of a sudden, really, when you boil it down, instead of it being a coin flip, maybe Missouri is a touchdown better, or and you lose the game. Like that was the whole fear coming into the season with a thin roster and that the first year coaching roster kind of issue. In a weird way, guys getting an extra year due to the COVID stuff could have helped Tennessee, but because you had so many guys leaving the portal and the first time transfer thing happening. For the first time, that all went against Tennessee because guys could just be like, I'm out of here.
Yep. Don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the challenge.
Now, I'm not sitting here trying to make excuses, but, I mean, McElroy and Tessitore, who weren't very good, by the way, they belabored the point. I mean, Tennessee hit harder by the transfer portal than just about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to give Heupel a little bit of credit there, right? Not, you know, credit, but he's dealing with a short-handed deck here.
Yeah. I'm going to take back my statements on Milton, his Florida performance. I mean, he only got one throw, the quote-unquote overthrown shovel pass on the one drive, and then he just had the final drive where he actually made one really good throw, and then it's just kind of comical at that point that he's overthrown a receiver on the last play of the game. Mm-hmm. When, you know, but I don't think you can really judge too much from that evidence. I do still think he has major accuracy and holding on to the ball issues, and that's where you have to make that decision. If Hooker's really out this week, I mean, on the one hand, it's like, well, that was the guy you guys thought was the best, so kind of hard to make an excuse for your coaches on that front, but if he doesn't play well and you don't have anyone else to go to, or you got to go down to Bailey, I don't know. That's definitely going to be a factor. Missouri's defense is so bad, too, so it kind of sucks if you're going to be missing one of your quarterbacks due to injury. Any other thing.
Or it could be good that you might have guys, again, running wide open.
Well, that's great, but that'd be great. I'd still rather have all three quarterbacks available.
No, sure, yeah.
With guys wide open.
No, I'm not going to disagree with that. Missouri, a 52.8% favorite to win, according to the FPI. Missouri on the season giving up 183 yards passing per game, but get this, they're giving up 270.8 a game on the ground. People said this after they played Kentucky. They cannot stop anybody on the ground. So if the running backs are healthy coming out of this weekend, at least Tennessee should be able to run the football with some level of success this weekend. Chris Rodriguez for Kentucky against Missouri had 27 carries for 205 yards and two touchdowns in that matchup. This weekend in the loss to Boston College, let's see here. Do you know this guy's? You ever heard of Pat Garwo the Third?
No,
haven't heard of him.
Mm-mm.
Pat Garwo.
Mm-mm.
Doesn't sound familiar.
Mm-mm.
25 carries, 175 yards, and two touchdowns.
Mm.
Long of 67 against Missouri. Boston College's quarterback, 18 of 29, 175, two touchdowns, one pick. Bazelak did throw it all over the place a little bit, but he also threw two picks and did go over 300 yards. I told you he'd have a pretty big day. Not big enough to save me, but it is what it is. Did he throw a pick in overtime to lose it? Yes, he did. First and 10. Takes a shot into triple coverage. Loses the game.
Yeah.
Boston College, walk-off win. Thoughts on this? I feel like this is a game Tennessee should win. I think it's going to be fairly high scoring. You know, I don't think you're going to hold Missouri to 17 to 20 points. I think they're going to get into the high 20s, low 30s. I think Tennessee can match that, though.
I mean, I just think the team that plays better is going to win. I feel like they're almost carbon copies in terms of like where they are.
I mean, I think we're a little bit better defensively.
It's Missouri year two,
and
they seem to be a little.
Their defense is getting worse. I mean, they haven't given up less than 24 points on the season. So you got to think Tennessee should be able to score, easily 31 points. They give up 24. To Central Michigan, 35 to Kentucky, 28 to Southeast Missouri, and then 41. Granted, that was in overtime, so it was 34-34. But they have 41 to Boston College.
They couldn't get off the field against Central Michigan. I was watching that game for a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, they could not get off the field. Get third and three, and they just hit a guy wide open on like a 5-yard out route. Like, they just could. I don't know what Missouri was even doing on defense. So, yeah, I mean, I don't expect Tennessee to win. I don't expect Tennessee to lose. Like, Tennessee plays really well, they'll win. They play pretty well, they'll probably win. They play average, go to overtime. I don't know, unless Missouri plays awful. And then Tennessee, you know what I mean? Like, they are both even.
Says that's a profound statement from you.
What?
The team that plays better will win.
That's not always the case.
That was going to be my argument. Sometimes the team is just so good that they don't have to play better. They just kind of are better and can still grind one out.
I mean, I feel like Tennessee played pretty poorly against Tennessee Tech, 156-0.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee played better against Florida than they did against Tennessee Tech, somehow.
That's not all that surprising.
Right. But that's what I mean by that, I guess, is where I am. These are the games. These are the games that decide this season. This is it.
The question is, with Cooper Mays potentially out, can we run the ball well enough against Missouri to put the stress on their defense?
Because we need that. I mean, that's when the offense was playing well against Florida. Even that drive that ended in the failed fourth down. I mean, you started backed up after the holding penalty. You ran it down Florida's throat. You made a couple decent throws to keep the drive alive. Or you made one really good throw to keep the drive alive. And then when you had another opportunity to do that, you dialed it up and you had what you wanted, and you just didn't execute the easiest part of the play. So
the catching when you're wide open?
I mean, yeah. So you got to be able to continue. If you continue to have that running success at Missouri, then that opens everything up. We'll come back, kick off hour number three. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out.